Transforming environmental rhetoric into environmental results. That is the topic of our segment this time around with our friend John Marshall Roberts, the author of the great book, Igniting Inspiration. And he talks about sustainability issues in a way that really does move people, especially when he does his workshops. But we want to bring the best of that out to you out there in the internet radio world. So today, John's going to talk about cracking the green code. He's written a white paper on that topic that addresses the gap, the green gap, if you will, between what people say they care about and what we are actually doing. Welcome back to the Green Front, John.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, first of all, I just read an interesting article in Time magazine just this past week on how Obama is such a successful, you know, example of, you know, bringing about societal, you know, change, which is so typically so hard to do. It's hard enough to get individuals to change, but how do you get a whole country to change its behavior? And how he really seems to be getting that. And part of the reason he's getting that is because I guess he's hired some behavioral scientists who have talked to him about their research. And one of the interesting findings, before we get into your research and your writing on this topic, is what motivates people to make environmental changes? Is it their consciousness, feeling guilty about, you know, their eco impact, and that's why they're changing that light bulb, or is it the cost savings? And it turns out it's really neither of those, according to this article. It's what is the behavioral norm? Are their neighbors changing their light bulbs? It's a sense of not being left behind and being part of a movement. Isn't that interesting?
That's extremely interesting, and it's one of the things, and I spent a lot of time in grad school setting up research studies and testing out ideas, and I went to school for psychology, and what I found frustrating was that it was hard to ask a question and get a result that was over, say, 30% correlation between any two variables. So when we're trying to answer tough questions like this, what we find is that it's hard to get a direct result because people are so different. What happens is we sort of assume all people are the same, and then we set up variables and we measure correlation between, say, their light bulb purchasing behavior and another variable. But we often, what we overlooked, even in the halls of academia, was the real diversity of value systems and worldviews that our audiences or our participants had. And so we were lumping people into the same basket. What I'm proposing with my paper actually is a new approach. Called, you know, roughly, we can call it values-based marketing, but a way of communicating with people so that our messages are catered specifically to what they care about. And I believe that Obama's success is largely because he has been communicating in a way that he could really cater his message to his audience so it doesn't feel washed out or generic.
Interesting. So on the one hand, you know, we have a leader that is leading all of us, and we all are different individuals, and he is finding a way to touch each of us, or at least that's what it seems to be. That's what the goal is, I'm sure, on his part. And yet you're saying we need to look at each individual's, you know, purpose, sense of values. So on the one hand, it sounds like, you know, one message can apply to all, and that we all share this environment. We are all sort of in the same proverbial boat, and we all need to wake up. At the same time, ideally, you're saying people get spoken to and met where they live, where they are.
Yes, and that's the paradox, and that's why they're probably at this stage and our species aren't more Obamas out there. He's a great example of what I believe is going to be a trend, and I believe Obama's a tremendously talented individual, but I believe he's just a little ahead of the curve. We're going to see more and more Obamas cropping up because I think we're starting to decode what works and what doesn't. You have to have both those universals and the specifics. Too often people get caught up looking at differences between people or just the similarities. Great communicators know how to integrate both of those into their communication so that they both strike a universal chord and they come across as extremely personal.
Okay, do you get specific in terms of how to address that green gap with different types of groups?
And yes,
and
you know,
people in terms of groups.
Yes, absolutely. In this particular paper, instead of focusing on universals, I'm looking specifically at value groups, the differences. We need to understand the value groups that exist out there. If we had to understand all 6.7 billion people and how they think, that would be very difficult. Fortunately, a psychologist named Dr. Claire W. Graves spent about 40 years observing how people's values change and evolve over time. And what he found is that there are exactly 7 different value systems operating in the world today. And to understand those values is to understand how people are shaping the way they look at the world. And it gives you tremendous leverage. I don't know if I have time to go over every single value group here today, but the first start is knowing that that's what we need to do.
Why don't you touch on them? We do have a few minutes, John.
We'd
like to, you know, give our audience enough specifics that it's not just theoretical, our conversations.
Yes, absolutely. So one point of frustration I see in a lot of environmentally minded people is that the other people may not share their concern. And so they get frustrated a lot of times and end up preaching to the choir. Well, in our country, there are at least two value groups operating that often don't find environmentalism to be that important. One is what we might call the individualistic thinker. A lot of business people, a lot of assertive individualistic thinking capitalists fall into this group. Their way of looking at the world is, express yourself for what you want, but don't get caught. Basically, what they value are success, power, and accomplishment. People operating from this mindset are never moved by messages that are rarely moved by messages that call them to sacrifice for the greater good. What they need are messages that show them that there's a distinct financial or personal opportunity that's going to come out of them behaving sustainably.
You talk about observable behavior as just a symptom of something larger and unseen, and you give as an example of a marble rolling around in a sink. Follow that marble for us and explain what's going on.
Okay. And yet some of this is abstract. In the spirit of a lot of great innovators, you had to go use mind experiments sometimes to talk about them because it is new. But I find the marble in the sink works well for people to understand how thoughts work. Human beings' thoughts are running. We're just running 24/7. And it would be very hard to predict what any given person's thinking about at any particular time. However, if we understand their values, we understand always where their thoughts are spinning. So if you think of spinning a marble around a sink, it'd be hard for any scientist to predict where the marble's going to go, its exact path, because it's a chaotic system. But everybody, even the smallest child, will tell you exactly where it's going to end up, and that would be the drain. Well, core values act as the drain, and everyone's thoughts are drawn towards their core values 24/7. So this individualistic person I talk about, well, we don't know what they're going to be thinking about in relation to our offering, but we do know where their leverage points are, where the drain is, so to speak, and that's going to be things that they see as opportunities for personal advancement. And we know to start there when we create our media or our marketing messages. And we do a completely different starting point if we had somebody with a different value group.
Interesting. And where are we on this path? It feels like, to the average American maybe that we're, I hear about green all the time. And, the latest Harris poll show that I think 41 or 42% of Americans think the media is exaggerating the impact of climate change, which is so bizarre, as someone who's been inside mainstream media trying to bring green content and consciousness to the masses, how do we go from like barely covering the issue to it being, covered in such a way that nearly half of Americans feel it's, exaggerated? So while there's a sense that, we're really making big progress on the environmental front because I'm hearing so much about it, so much research shows we have so far to go, and you don't need to look at any scientific data. You really can just look around all of us in our daily lives and see that people are still driving, the big inefficient cars, and that there's lights on whether they need to be or not all over your, city, driving past the car lots or the office buildings lit up at night. We're looking at a spectrum, let's say 1 to 10, where are we? Like somewhere, I don't know, it feels to me like maybe between 2 and 3 in terms of where we really need to go to turn this ship around.
Well, that's a good question, and I think that one of the great insights is that change, the way change happens, if you look at systems theory, the way people change and societies change, it's not always linear, and it doesn't always happen where you think it might happen. So what's going on, for example, in our car industry, the financial meltdown and all this stuff, may be one of the biggest catalysts for environmental change, but it may be marketed in some ways quite differently. So it's hard to really tell what are the critical leverage points on a massive scale and how far along are we. That would be hard to measure scientifically speaking. But I do feel quite strongly that if the people on the cutting edge of this, the people who really understand the necessity and who are committed to fashioning their livelihood and their life around making it happen, if they understand how other human beings tick and how to get through to them at a deeper level, that change can happen quite quickly. And that is what Obama did. He's just this guy who was able to communicate in a way that other people saw reflected in his words and actions their own potential for a life that would be enjoyable. And I think that we all have that capacity. But we have to dig a little deeper than we have been. We need to stop thinking about people in terms of demographics. We need to start thinking about them in terms of psychographics or the way their mind works. It's not impossible. It's really simple as long as we can use the right research and we have that at our fingertips. And that's what I'm trying to do, is make that accessible to everybody.
And do you want to make the Cracking the Green Code white paper accessible to our listeners? If so, where can they find it and read more about it, John?
Okay, you know, it's actually you got the lead on this story. It's going to be promoted widely starting next week, and there's going to be quite a lot of attention drawn to it starting on April 14th. But in the meantime, if they want to look at the website for a company called EcoAlign.com out of D.C., EcoAlign.com, then that would be a good place to check in once we make it public.
John Marshall Roberts, thank you for aligning your time with ours on the Green Front. Always appreciate your comments and insight. We'll be back right after these messages with someone who's going to be talking about Travelocity's sustainable initiatives, and that's great timing as you plan your summer vacation.